Chapter 1. Blackout. It was almost 2 a.m. according to Lucy's phone. Still, no signal. The sound of a key scratching its way into the lock pricked her ears.
Luce,
came Dan's voice as the front door clicked open. She shoved the envelope back into the drawer.
Dan,
she cried, dashing out from the candlelit kitchen to her partner who stood in the doorway wearing a headlamp.
I saw your note, she quavered. What the hell is going on?
I'll explain as we go. Take these, he said, panting as he passed her 2-gallon-sized bottles of water. Just leave them in the hallway. We need to be quick. He swiveled the vast hiking backpack off his shoulders and swung it onto the floor. It was fit to burst.
Dan, you're freaking me out. What is all this?
Choked Lucy.
Put your shoes on. There's more in the car,
he panted, mopping the band of sweat from his brow and disappearing out of the door again.
Come on!
Lucy hastily pulled on a pair of sneakers and set off after him down the blacked-out stairwell.
Dan, tell me what's going on. You leave me a note saying everything's about to change. What does that even mean?
Whisper, he hissed, casting his light around the deserted level. Did you see the news? Before the networks went down.
I caught a bit at work. Is this to do with the whole space station thing?
Replied Lucy, hastening to keep up as Dan raced on.
Yes,
he said as they rounded the corner of the 6th floor. Dad called me right before the news broke. The White House thinks what happened to the ISS is linked to what's happening to the satellites.
What is happening to them?
Probed Lucy. I don't know, okay? All I know is what Dad told me. It's what's next that matters.
Stop!
He halted and covered his headlamp. Lucy froze mid-step and listened, her eyes adjusting to the darkness.
Out! Go on,
crowed a smoker's voice from around the corner.
There you go, Mommy'll let you back in when it's morning.
A sliver of flickering candlelight spilled out into the stairwell, accompanied by a soft meow before the unseen apartment door clicked shut again and darkness returned. Dan waited a few seconds more, then uncovered his headlamp, re-illuminating the stairs downward.
Everything we use, he whispered urgently as they continued their hurry down the levels. Phones, the internet, the national grid, banks, farming, everything. It's all dependent on GPS, on satellites. Without GPS, there's no universal time anymore, so every nation has to revert to their own alternatives, which will be fractionally different to one another. That tiny split-second difference is enough to trigger server errors across the world, which means goodbye stock markets, goodbye currency. It also means we'll have to switch all our power sources back to manual, which is crazy intensive.
Dan clicked his light off again as they reached the 1st floor. As they approached the lobby doors, he slowed to a halt. Cautiously, they stepped out onto the steep, pitch-black street. It was deserted. Vivid moonlight reflected off parked cars and curtained windows. Dan led the way to their car and popped the trunk. It was brimming with supplies, bags of food, equipment, and water.
Here, he said, passing her a headlamp of her own. Don't turn it on until we're back inside.
Lucy fumbled the lamp into place.
Did you let anyone into the apartment while I was gone?
Asked Dan, heaving out 6 bags and handing them to Lucy.
What? Why does that matter?
She huffed, staggering under the new weight.
Holy shit, you did,
breathed Dan.
Was it Cassie?
No, she took a cab after we left the bar.
Then who?
Dan, what the hell? You're acting insane. It was the lady from downstairs, from 701. She wanted a glass of water, so I gave it to her. It's not a big deal. Can we do this later? These bags are killing me.
Jesus, Luce, I told you, hissed Dan.
Told me what, Dan?
She countered, placing the bags on the ground.
In the note, I said be careful.
Oh, and from that I was supposed to get don't give any old ladies water because something's up with the satellites? Yeah, my bad,
she snapped in a harsh whisper. Dan bit his lip.
She'll be back tomorrow, Luce. You know that, right? For more water.
And?
We don't have enough to share, retorted Dan. I could barely get enough for the two of us as it was.
We don't know how long it's going to be before the water comes back on, and we need enough to drink and flush out the toilet.
Dan's head snapped around. Footsteps echoed down the sidewalk. He grabbed the lip of the trunk and knelt down beside the car, pulling the trunk down slightly. Lucy squinted at the dark silhouette heading in their direction. Dan tugged the hem of her jacket and she quickly crouched down beside him. The stranger's footsteps got louder. Lucy looked at Dan. His head was bowed and turned away from the sidewalk, his eyes fixed on the ground.
She copied, tilting her head downward, also covering her head with her jacket. The figure passed by without stopping. Lucy tentatively uncovered her pale face and peered out at Dan, who was looking at her intently, a finger held up to his lips. She nodded. The footsteps ceased a little way down the street, and they heard a door open and close. Dan indicated for Lucy to keep still while he shuffled closer to the sidewalk and leaned forwards, checking both directions, before rising to his feet, scanning the entire street. "Clear," he whispered, opening the trunk once again. Lucy climbed to her feet, her head rushing slightly as the circulation returned to her legs. "Dan, you're scaring me now." He hastily retrieved more bags, then sealed the trunk with a quiet click. He faced her directly, 5 or 6 brimming bags in each hand. "If you're scared, it's because you're beginning to understand the situation. We need to get these inside." They re-entered the building and switched their headlamps on, beginning the long stairwell climb. For a while, they ascended in silence, the darkness punctuated only by their shallow breaths and scuffling of shoes. "I withdrew all the money I could from our accounts," said Dan, breaking the silence as they rounded the 5th floor, "until the ATM stopped working on the last one."
"You did what? You took my credit cards?" seethed Lucy. "A minute ago, you were laying into me for giving an old lady some water."
"Whisper," insisted Dan. "Listen to me, Luce," he panted. "In 6 years, have I ever given you reason to doubt me?"
"No,"
she conceded as they staggered upwards. "Have I ever abused your trust or put you in harm's way?"
"Okay, Dan, I get it. But you have to tell me why you're doing all this."
Dan said nothing for a few steps, recovering his breath.
"Without electronic trading," he replied finally, "our currency's going to crash. So are all the currencies everywhere. Money means nothing now. It was the right thing to do. You have to trust me."
Lucy swallowed hard. The beam from her headlamp wobbled up a step with each foot she put forwards.
"In the morning," he puffed, "people will start to realize they have no way of accessing their banks, no way of paying for stuff. First they'll protest, then they'll realize nothing can be done. They'll panic.
At the same time, some folk will have figured out that security cameras have stopped working and alarm systems are offline.
So, like New Orleans after Katrina."
"Exactly. Mass looting."
"And with the phones down, no one can call the cops,"
gasped Lucy as they rounded another level.
"Right, which means the looting will become more violent."
"But in San Francisco?"
"Trust me, take away people's power, their food and water, and there's no such thing as civilized society. Just one big tinderbox. I've seen it happen."
Lucy stopped in her tracks.
"Are we going to be safe here, Dan?"
"Keep moving," he replied, glancing back at her.
"We should get to D.C. Your dad, we'd be safe with him, right?"
she pressed, catching up as they reached the 8th floor.
"It's too late for that. It's a 4-day drive and we'd have no way to refuel. If the government's smart, they'll declare martial law first thing tomorrow. They'll deploy the National Guard. That'll restore order."
"Are you going to get called up?"
said Lucy, aghast, as they reached their apartment.
"No, luckily my rank was too junior for that," replied Dan, lowering half his bags and taking out the key.
Lucy's arms burned as he opened their front door. Dan grabbed the lowered bags and staggered inside to the end of their hallway, where he abandoned both handfuls and sat down on the ground. Lucy kicked the door closed with her foot and ditched her bags immediately, sliding down onto the floor adjacent to Dan.
"We're safe here," he panted, "so long as no one knows we've got a stockpile. Do you understand? That's why Water Lady can't come here again."
"Her name's Manuela,"
said Lucy, mopping her brow. The beam from her headlamp crossed Dan's midway along the corridor floor. She clicked off the flashlight. "In the next 7 days, Luce, things are going to change beyond recognition. In this city, it's you and me now, no one else. It has to be." She nodded, but said nothing. Her mind slid from their Spanish neighbor in 701, whom she would no longer assist, to her best friend, whom she'd spent the evening with only a few hours prior. The latter was harder to abandon. She couldn't just cut the rope.
"Come on," said Dan, standing up and holding out a hand for Lucy. "We need to get the rest from the car. 2 more trips.
Lucy took his hand and clicked her light back on. She knew she could trust Dan with her life, and she knew he was right.
But she had to warn Cassie.